ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ಮದನ ಗೋಪಾಲ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಮೋಹನ ರೂಪ ನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಮ ಹರಿ ಜಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ಜಯ ಜಯ ದೇವರಿ ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ವಂದೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾನಂದ ಕುಮಾರ ಜಯೋ ರಾಧಾಮದ వందేహం శ్రీ గురో శ్రీయుత పదకమలం. So I'd like to welcome you all to this session of Krishna Katha on the occasion of Sri Krishna Janmashtami. As per the instructions given by Govind Prabhu, I am supposed to give an overview of prayers by the demigods. This is also called Garbhastuti. Lord Krishna is in the womb of Mother Devaki, and Brahma, Shiva, Narada, and also other demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, they all invisibly come in the room in that dark prison cell of Kamsa, and they offer very deep, heartfelt prayers which are full of wisdom for the benefit of all souls seeking liberation from material bondage. The prayers are many, so we will just be taking a brief overview of some of the main ideas, and two or three we would be discussing in detail. Lord Krishna's appearance is a very special event. In today's Kali Yuga times, a special event is seen by whether you have a holiday or not. Well, that's not the point. If there is no holiday from work, it's still a holy day, which is the original purport or intent of having a holiday. I was having this question in my mind that if Krishna is the Supreme Master, he is the boss, and the boss is visiting one of his branch offices. So you see a flurry of activities if you get to know that next week is inspection day. Some top brass, somebody from the HO is coming from the head office. If the main boss is coming, then everything is spruced up, cleaned up. All the servants, all the silverware is polished. The servants are very nicely behaving. So my understanding was, is it something like that? So we were discussing with some devotees, and Premanandi Prabhu volunteered some very vital piece of information. He described to me how Sanatana Goswami, in one of his compilations, he gives the reason why these demigods, they assemble in Kamsa's room invisibly and they are offering prayers to Lord Krishna, who has not yet come out of Devaki's womb. Lord Brahma is the creator of this universe, Srishti Karta, Srashta, Jagat Vidhata. There are so many various ways in which Lord Brahma is glorified. Only in Srimad Bhagavat we find that Brahma is not the original creator. Creation is described as sarga. Sarga means when something is created. So Bhagavat says sarga and visarga. There is a creation and there is a secondary creation. How do we understand these two things? So sarga is the original creation of the ingredients. Like in some place, the bricks, mortar, cement is manufactured. And those things are then assembled, which look like a house, a factory, a stadium, a shed, a godown, whatever. So who is the original manufacturer of the ingredients? That is not mentioned in most Puranas. So Brahma, let's read the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, to describe Brahma as Tene Brahma Ridaya Adi Kavaye. Adi Kavi is Lord Brahma. Tene, in whose heart, Brahma, that is knowledge of the Vedas. The one who gave originally knowledge in the heart of Lord Brahma is the one on whom I meditate. So Vyasdev is very clear. And he calls that personality Satyam Param Dhimahi. Now Satyam is not an impersonal truth. Because in the very beginning he has said, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He has identified by name. Simply put, Srila Prabhupada once in a lecture said that realizing God can be a difficult thing. But at least our acharyas, they have given us God's name, His address, where He stays, His parents, they have all information. Queen Kunti, she prays that Krishnaya Vasudevaya, there could be so many Krishnas, right? Even now there could be people with the name Krishna. Krishnaya Vasudevaya, one who belongs to Vasudev, Devaki Nandanayacha, one who gives pleasure to Devaki, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, who is known as the son of Nanda, Govindaya Namo Namah, and one who gives pleasure to the senses, the cows, to land. So there cannot be any misconception that we are hinting at some other Krishna. Arjuna also is called Krishna, by the way. In Mahabharata, there is the name of Arjuna, who is called Krishna. So Brahma is the secondary creator. He creates this universe, which is also described as one urge which he has to be acknowledged as a creator after qualifying for many, many lives, following all the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Then you can become a Lord Brahma. Just like in common parlance, if you want to become a collector, you have to be an IAS first. You have to do the mains examinations and pass an interview. Then you could be at a junior level, and after many years you could be appointed a collector. Similarly, to become someone as Brahma, you have to have a lot of qualification. But of course, even Brahma's life is not easy. We see that he creates the universe, and from day one practically, demons start attacking him. Him personally, not anything in his creation. some steal away resources like Hiranyaksha drilling everywhere and taking away, causing the whole thing to be in imbalance. Madhu Kaitabha, they stole Brahma's knowledge. What to speak of? They were like, identity theft. You steal away somebody's knowledge. Hackers, the original hackers. If somebody is sleeping, you take away all his knowledge. Well, what does it mean? You see the subtleties involved in stealing somebody's knowledge. So again, Lord Vishnu has to interfere and he kills them both. So right from day one, this business of bringing a universe into action or creating it is actually troublesome. So Sanatana Goswami compares Lord Brahma with a farmer. Previous days, the system would be that the king's land would be divided between farmers, and the farmers would do their activity. If some crop comes, they would give some share to the king. If nothing comes, they would just say, Maharaj, this year nothing grew. So it's the king who maintains them. So Brahma is like that farmer who has his farm, he has his land, he has worked hard, he has sown the seeds, and what do you do after that? Just wait. You can't do much. So Lord Brahma is waiting for the rain to shower mercy. So he's waiting for Ghanashyam. Lord Krishna, that cloud, that dark cloud, to shower mercy on him. He knows fully well that I can't manage this world on my own. In fact, if you read Krishna book, it begins with, once the world was overburdened. It's always overburdened by those who want to exploit it. Sanatana Goswami describes Lord Shiva as a peacock. The peacock also is waiting. He's seeing that when will the day come when I will see the whole sky filled with rain clouds? The peacock makes sounds like megho, megho, meg is cloud. So he says, I have seen a cloud. He wants the clouds to start showering rain. So Lord Brahma and Shivas, they are very great personalities. What about other sadhus, other rishis, munis like Narada, or lesser demigods, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, who are they? And why are they happy? Or why are they praying for Lord Krishna's appearance? They are described as the Chataka birds. Sanskrit poetry has this understanding that a Chataka bird is someone who looks up in the sky for water. You may say that, my dear bird, there is so much water down here, lakes, reservoirs are full. Just have your fill, go and quench your thirst. The Chataka will not take that. It will open its beak and wait for that drop of fresh monsoon water straight from the clouds. In fact, Rupa Goswami compares a pure devotee with a Chataka bird. That although so much is available for exploitation, the Chataka bird doesn't look at all at this world. He looks up. But sometimes, even before the rain falls, there is lightning. So instead of a drop of sweet rain water, you might get a bolt of lightning on you. But the bird says, let me die because of that bolt of lightning, but I won't compromise my taste. I won't taste any water here. So pure devotees are like that. If Krishna decides to send a calamity instead of some bonanza, some blessings, they say no problem. So, Brahma, Shiva, and all the demigods, they are so much eager for Lord Krishna to appear, to take his darshan. Interestingly, in the 10th canto, 87th chapter, which deals with prayers by the personified Vedas, Lord Brahma and all the demigods after him are described as modern. In fact, anything after the creation is called modern. When we say modern means today, what happened yesterday or at the most 2 days ago. How come somebody who was at the beginning of creation be called modern? The idea is, anything before the creation is actually original. So even the demigods, they cannot understand. It's not like the demigods see Krishna on and off. They can talk with him or they understand him fully. So Krishna's appearance is still the most rarest kind of thing. Krishna himself gives a hint of this in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Name vidu sura gana prabhavam namaharshaya aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvashah. Name vidu sura gana. You may think that the demigods know me very well. No. Name vidu sura gana prabhavam, my prowess, namaharshaya, not even this great rishis. Somebody might argue that we see the demigods engaging in some kind of sense gratification. They eat nicely, live nicely, live a very opulent lifestyle. Because of their attachment to material things, they might not be able to see Krishna. But the maharshis, they are actually detached. What about them? And Krishna says no. In fact, he mentions 16 personalities. 7 Manus, 4 Chatswara Maharshis, 7 Manus and 4 great sages, 11 and 5 other personalities. None of them actually know me who as I am. Why? If anyone can know me, it is only by dint of devotional service. Without performing devotional service, one cannot know Krishna as he is. And how do you know and how do you perform devotional service? Without coming in contact with the devotee, there is no question of devotional service. Bhaktistu Bhagavata Bhakta Sangena Sanjayate. In the history of those who are striving for self-realization, the initial stages are progress in karma or progress on jnana. You can, by your own efforts, have something to do with progress in karma or jnana. But in devotion service, no way. So Krishna says, yo mam ajam anadim cha vetti loka maheshwaram. One who understands me as unborn. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says, well, if unborn is the only criteria, Lord Brahma is unborn. Brahma is described as having no father, no mother. But then anadi, is Brahma anadi? He is just aja. His father and mother cannot be known because he was born from a lotus. But he is not anadi without a beginning. He has a beginning. And then Loka Maheshwaram, the supreme controller of all the planets and all the inhabitants of those planets. So we shall begin the narration of the circumstances which led to the demigods entering Kamsa's prison house. The second chapter of the 10th canto has Shukadeva Goswami relating to Maharaj Parikshit, the the rise and rise of Kamsa. He just went on increasing his atrocities. Normally, how does a person become powerful in this material world? You have material power, wealth, and friends. So it is said that Kamsa, he began to grow his circle of influence. And look at the luminaries among his friends. Pralamba, Bakka, Chanur, Tranavarta, Agha, Mushtika, Arishta, Dvivida, Putana, Keshi, Dhenuka, Narakasur. These were the people whom Kamsa started striking chords of friendship. What does actually mean that demons have friendship? They have pacts, or they divide their territory. Like in the Second World War, Nazi Germany had a 10-year non-aggression treaty with Russia, and they just tore it up in a year. It's all a matter of convenience. So Garga Samhita, one scripture describes how exactly Kamsa made friends with all these personalities. He called them one by one and actually blasted them, pummeled them, subjugated them so mercilessly that they thought there is no way out, otherwise this fellow might kill us. So, a symbol for Kamsa's friendship with all these personalities would be like a twisted arm could be a better symbol. There was not a choice. And they all agreed, yes, my lord. Even when the demigods come in front of you for battle, they are afraid of losing their turbans. In Sanskrit poetry, if you lose your turban, that's like an ultimate insult. So you defeat somebody in battle and you take hold of his uttariya and bring it back. And that's like you are glorious. In fact, if we take a geographical view of India, Bharatvarsha, 5,000 years ago, Kamsa had formed what we can call a northern alliance. All these personalities from various provinces. He was very much angry with the Yadus practically, because he was told that his killer would be born in that dynasty. So he began persecuting the Yadu dynasty. They all began to flee what they can do. Even today we have displaced persons when they face severe persecution from the government. What else can they do but just run out and disperse over a large geographical area? So Tudra Goswami described that the Yadavas began to flee. They went to the Kuru Desh, Panchala, Kekaya, Sharva, and some hid. Some like Akrur, they stayed close to Kamsa. Not that they compromised themselves or something like that. But they were pure devotees, and they were saying that very soon Krishna will appear. So we would like to be as close to action as possible. We can see the best of the whole thing. In fact, they're saying that the closer you are to danger, the farther you are away from calamity. In fact, it was Akrur who was chosen by Kamsa to fetch Krishna and Balaram. So Akrur's calculation was correct. He was waiting for that boon. When will that day come when I would be given some official service? Of course, Kamsa was thinking I'll bring them over and kill them. Akrur never believed that. He knew that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. But some like Akrur chose to stay in Mathura. Mathura was the capital. the metropolis of ancient India. A true metropolis in the sense, tall buildings, and Shukadeva Goswami describes in much detail how it had golden domes, golden water pots, all the streets were cleaned every day. Its water, fragrant water sprinkled from the trunks of elephants. That was the opulence. Nowadays we don't have elephants to do things. We have gargantuan machines look like elephant. But they just, it's not the same thing anymore. And then Kamsa began his waiting game again. 6 pregnancies over, 6 babies done with, only 2 more. And then came the sign that Devaki is pregnant for the 7th time. But all of a sudden, it was reported that she had a miscarriage. So Kamsa began to grow very, very suspicious. That for the first 6 times there was nothing like a miscarriage. And how suddenly now something happened. Now that she is pregnant for the 8th time, just before that, so it was described by Shukadeva Goswami that the 7th miscarriage was actually Lord Anantadevi, Lord Balaram, whose appearance is celebrated a few days ago. He was told to be transferred from Devaki's womb to Mother Rohini's womb. Shukadeva Goswami gives a very intricate explanation of how Balaram and Krishna, they got their names in the very same year when there was such a big gap in their appearance. So Rohini was with Vasudev. When she was 3 months pregnant, she was transferred from Mathura and she came to Vrindavan. And then she bore her embryo for 14 months. So that's how Krishna and Balaram, their name giving ceremony was celebrated at the same day. Now the stage was set for Lord Krishna to appear. All of a sudden, Vasudeva began to feel very happy within. Because the Lord had entered into his mind. Krishna's appearance is not like the appearance of a mundane living entity who takes birth from his mother's womb. Our body, our material bodies, are due to the material laws of how bodies grow. Krishna's body doesn't grow like that. That's why he's called Ajanma. He doesn't take birth like a normal living entity. So then when, from the heart of Vasudev, Lord Krishna was transferred to the heart of Devaki, she began to grow. Her bodily presence began to grow so much. And Vasudev and Kamsa could understand that there is something happening here. And he thought, if I can kill her now, should I? But he said, wait. The world doesn't respect somebody who is a killer of women. And especially now she is pregnant, so it would be very bad for my reputation. Just imagine. In one way we can say, what kind of reputation you have? So why should you worry about it? On second thought, even demons, they do care for something like reputation. Because they know there is an afterlife. I'll have to be accounted for. And we see the situation today that so-called very, very pious, gentle-looking people saying, there is no afterlife. Why worry? By just this one thing, that there is no afterlife, people today have solved most of their problems. that there is no need to worry, there is no need for any remorse, there is no need for any kind of prayaschitta, expiation for your sins, because everything will be squared off. If all of us, so just think about it, if all of us, if after death, the whole thing becomes squared, our account becomes blank, then we all, logically speaking, should have similar birth situation and all of us should lead the same kind of life. How is it that during birth there is so much variety? Somebody is born a millionaire, somebody is born on the footpath, somebody is born with talents, somebody has no talents, somebody is beautiful, somebody is ugly, somebody is born blind, somebody is having so much of personal resources, or somebody is courageous, somebody is brave, somebody is recovered. How do you account for this variety? So the answer is there is no controller, it's all blind. One fellow is in a book called The Blind Watchmaker. God is called watchmaker. Like we have this classical argument that how can you have a watch without a watchmaker? If you find a watch on the Chapati beach, it's not that at a particular constellation and the waves strike the sand and sometimes watches do appear. No. Watch means, it says Titan, that means somebody has made it in Bangalore. So that watch presupposes a watchmaker. There has to be somebody who put all these things together. And it's not like putting together. You just can't put things in a bag and then something orderly can come out of it. It's precise mechanism. So today's scientists, so-called scientists, they observe everything, they see the mechanism. Like Prabhupada once joked, something is happening in a dispensary and the doctor asks, blood pressure, normal. ECG, normal. Temperature, normal. Digestion, normal. Breath, normal. Verdict, patient dead. How is it possible? If there are so many things which are normal, how can you say the patient is dead? So there are laws of planetary motion, laws of gravity, the Ritu Chakra, the seasons, oh, they are coming. The planets, they are in their position. Verdict, no God. When so many things are happening, precisely, you can predict things, if you can understand the science, you can observe things, and your understanding is there is no God. So therefore, if they say with such impunity, Prabhupada had to resort to very strong language, that their brains are filled with cow dung. People feel insulted. But then that's the only way to shake them up from their lethargy. So here we have the main controllers. Brahma, Shiva are the main controllers of this cosmic manifestation, and they are ecstatic. The Lord Krishna himself is appearing. So this is 10 to 31, 10th canto, 2nd chapter, text 26 first. The demigods say, Satyavatam satyaparam trisatyam satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye satyasya satyam rita satya netram satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna. O Lord, you never deviate from your vow. It is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth in all the ingredients of creation. And therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone and your instructions apply for everyone for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances,
we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. So even these great personalities, they have to ask for protection. Protection from opposite forces, protection from the currents of this material world. Because they know this world is a dangerous place. Especially since we have the word Satyam coming so many times in this verse. And especially a newcomer hearing something at the Hare Krishna center, you come to know of this term called Supreme Absolute Truth. Satya Param, Param Satya. Truth is different from fact. Sometimes they say. Because what you see may not be the truth. You see someone saying, you cut his hands, I'll cut the neck, okay? You may say, hey, there's a murder taking place here. So they could be tailors talking about something. So that is a fact. You say, I heard with my own ears that they're talking of cutting hands and cutting necks. But that's not the truth. So what your newspaper delivers through the gap in the door every day could be fact. I'm not saying it is. It could be fact. It's mostly garbled information, disguised wisdom, or plain commercial. Something to dupe you of your so-called hard-earned money. So what we get today is just plain information. It's not truth. Psychologists are understanding there are diseases that people suffer from too much of email. Ingesting too much data. They call it data asphyxiation. Those who are doctors are understand. Asphyxiation is when you feel choked up. How do I deal with so much email? How do I deal with so much this? And even if you're someone who doesn't have an email account, or even when you travel on the road, there is so much of information. So many commercials. So that is not what is meant by Satya here. In fact, some of our scientists in the BI, Bhaktivedanta Institute, one particularly gave a demonstration of how, like if you see this object, I can't prove it, but they can. This is a book stand. Where is the book stand? All of you say, it's in your right hand. Believe you me, there are scientists who can prove it's not there. And it's not like a laughing matter, they write thick journals about it. That actually the object is seen on our retina. So the idea that this is a book stand and not paper origami, or it's not a weapon, or it's not just wood. Why don't you call it just wood? Your identification with an object, calling it a book stand, gave you that impression that what I'm saying is a book stand. So if you don't understand, don't worry about it. Most of the world doesn't either. And those few who do, they get the Nobel Prize. Which they give among themselves. So, why the demigods are calling one baby yet to be born, in so many ways, you are Satyam, 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 Satyam. Akrura, in his prayer, he prays, he calls Krishna Ritagira. Ritam also is one word which stands for truth. Gira is your speech. So they say that, my Lord, you are true to your word. There is no doubt. When Krishna is present, there is no doubt. I'm just tempted to quote a small couplet from William Blake, which I agree to be used in the original BTG in 1967. He who replies to words of doubt doth put the light of knowledge out. He says, if you reply to the word of doubt, then what do you do in your life? You deliberately put the light of knowledge out. But then you understand that today's world, everything is based on doubt. One philosopher said, I think, therefore I exist, therefore I am. That means, not that he thinks he is, but he says, I think, I can think, therefore I can come to the conclusion that I must be existing. But now, even that thinking is changed to, I doubt, therefore I am. I have the ability to doubt. And imagine when Prabhupada went to talk to the young Americans, mostly hippies, their philosophy was, believe no one. That means doubt was reigning supreme. Either you believe everybody is correct, or nobody is correct. Either or. There is no question. And in that setting, Prabhupada came, and Prabhupada has to convince this tough audience that God is a blue cowherd boy. He likes to play his flute. And he has cows to tend as an occupation. And he lives in a village. Just imagine the gap which they have to bridge, the knowledge gap. So one thing, one reporter, when he was talking with Prabhupada, and he was trying in his own reporter's journalist's way of trying to corner Prabhupada, make him repeat something, make him contradict something, and they say, just now you said that, now you're saying this. So after he came out, and what he said, are you satisfied? He says, well, no. But this man is convinced. He says, I'm not convinced about his message at all. What he said didn't make any sense to me practically. But I'm convinced of one thing. He is convinced of what he said. Like at least I can feel so many times if somebody comes and asks a question and he gives the answer and he says, thank you, Prabhu. And he says, hey, it worked. It didn't work in my life. I still have some doubts about it. But somebody comes and he says, it's there in the Bhagavad Gita. Don't you know? And he says, oh yes, of course. So I've seen it happen to doctors too, that he says, are you feeling alright? Yes. Yes. That means he's not exactly sure whether he understood the diagnosis properly or not. But since that means there is no complaint now, you have any problems? No. Then continue the medicine. So, something similar happens. But Krishna is described as, if I give my word, then it has to happen like that. Krishna sometimes gets momentary lapses. I just learned it from Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentary. It happened when Sudama, the poor friend of Krishna, he came to meet him in Dwarka. And after he left, Krishna thought momentarily within himself, hey, how come he's poor? How come he's so poor? I should gain something. And that's it. Within a very, like a nanosecond, we can't call it a nanosecond even, within less than a second, fraction of a time than that, immediately Sudama's palace and riches and everything just came up, which can, you know, put to shame any demigod's resources. We'll see two instances where Krishna gave a word. Somebody gave a word on behalf of Krishna. There are so many. In fact, in every pastime concerning a devotee, you can have this thing. We just concentrate on two, where Krishna gave his word that Arjun, my devotee will never perish. In a sense, if somebody becomes my devotee, I will never lose him. I will never see that if he is lost. So when Arjun came to know that Jayadrath, Bhishma, Dronacharya, Dushasana, warriors of such caliber, five of them came together and they butchered my son. They just shot arrows, they threw lances, spears, swords, they hit him with clubs. Although he was 16 years old, Abhimanyu was fighting like a Maharathi. He was brought in a Chakravyuha, a phalanx of soldiers arranged like circles within circles within circles. And you have to find a way to get inside. But suddenly you go, if you look behind, the arrangement has changed. So that's what a Chakravyuha is. Normally we feel that sometimes in life situations, oh, I am in a Chakravyuha. I came into it, I don't know how to get out of it. But this was a real Chakravyuha, a military phalanx. No sooner than he heard that my son's dead, and Jayadrath was the one who delivered the fatal blow, he said, by sunset tomorrow, either Jayadrath is dead or I enter the funeral pyre. Krishna was just next to him and he said, what? He said, yes, I have decided. He said, but who is going to do that? How are you going to kill him? He said, well, I depend on you. Who else is there for me? So, that night Arjuna just slept soundly. And Krishna was thinking, what am I supposed to do? So the next morning, the war began with a conch shell. The day ended with a conch shell blowing, and then the war was stopped. So it began with a conch shell. And that night itself, the news spread like wildfire. And Arjuna had taken this vow. Duryodhan came to learn of it, and he was overjoyed. He says, tomorrow war is over. And people ask him, why are you so happy? Two things. If Arjuna kills Jayadrath, I know that his father had asked a boon from Lord Shiva. Whoever causes my son's head to touch the ground, his own head will burst into 100 pieces. So if Arjuna does that, Jayadrath may or may not die, Arjuna should die. And if Arjuna doesn't harm Jayadrath, then he enters voluntarily into the funeral pyre. From my point of view, the war is won. Duryodhana is very happy. The next day, Arjuna, preparing for a long day, a very, very challenge-filled day, he began slaughtering the Kaurava army like a hot knife going through butter. And Duryodhana, fearing that this could happen, like right from the moment the conch shell blows, Arjuna is just going to come through like anything. So he had kept Jayadrath as far away as possible. He had kept some of the mightiest warriors in between. And then, with other Marathis that he's helping, Arjuna could see that it's not becoming easy. By noontime, he was almost nowhere. Jayadrath could never be seen in sight. Two more praharas passed, and Arjuna could see that the horses are fatigued. And Krishna says, I don't think we can continue like that. We have to save the last bit of energy for the final onslaught. I think we should rest a while. At least I should feed the horses. So Arjuna made a sort of an encampment of arrows. And within that, Krishna began to massage the horse's legs. We may see that Krishna says, I love my devotee so much, I will do anything for him. Here Krishna is serving somebody who is serving his devotee. Then Krishna fed those horses. Arjuna fetched water from the ground. The horses were refreshed. Arjuna was not thinking that, you know, what kind of this, you know, we are losing time. But this is good time management, by the way. If your horses are fresh, relieved of the fatigue, they can fight. Again, they start their onslaught. Krishna is guiding Arjuna's chariot skillfully through so many different arrangements of warriors. But finally, they could see that the sun is slowly inching towards the horizon. It's bright, then the sun slowly becomes orange-hued, and then becomes the red. Actually, the sun touched the horizon, and still there was no sight of Jayadrath. Faster, faster, Arjuna is telling Krishna. And Krishna is guiding skillfully the various arrangements of people just trying to become obstacles. Many of the warriors just couldn't stand. They knew that this is just, we are just like cannon fodder. We are just being fed. We have no chance to stand up and fight against Arjuna. But what to do? Duryodhana's orders. The sun came halfway. Arjuna was a little bit worried what's going to happen. Arjuna moves forward. The sun is almost down. And finally, it just disappeared below the horizon. There was a big uproar in the Kaurava camp. There was Jayadrath. And he was shouting as if, I'm saved, I'm saved. Many are just blinking their eyes. So really? Krishna normally is true to his vow. If he says something, he will do it, he will do it. Jayadrath now is in eyesight. Arjuna is standing in the chariot. He is confused as to that he has no comments. And suddenly Krishna says, look, the sun. As he points out, everybody could see that the sun is still there. It has just not left the horizon completely. Now that was something which nobody can be confused. They could see the sun is there. And within everybody's earshot, what everybody could hear, Krishna told Arjun, here is the sun and here is Jayadrath. Now do the needful. Arjuna is called Savyasachi. He can shoot with both hands. But this one he particularly used his right hand. His two fingers had that elastic bowstring which went up right up to his ear. The twang, the arrow was relieved. And Duryodhana was like composed. He knew that it's not so easy, chap. It's you who will die. So he saw the arrow coming towards Jayadrath. It pierced his head. And he straight away carried it forward. And he was saying, what's happening? Where's the arrow taking his head? That arrow, with the head on its point, went straight up to that hermitage where his father was doing some kind of penance, God knows what. It fell on his lap. And seeing something fall on his lap, and something so hideous like a, you know, a slain warrior's head, he just said, and he became the cause of his son's head touching the ground. And his own head burst into pieces. So Krishna It's not like everybody was thinking, how can somebody be saved in such an impossible situation? There's nothing impossible for Krishna. Why? Because he governs everything. While commenting on a Ramayana lecture, Prabhupada said, normally law of gravity means you drop something, it falls. Because there is a law. And this law is universal. It doesn't play favorites. Whatever falls has to come and touch the ground. So he says the materialistic way is to try to understand this law. And expertise in this field is glorified in this world. But here we see the monkeys, they are writing Ram on a stone, and the stone floats. Normally, stones cannot float. So he says, we as devotees, we don't do research on why the stones didn't drown, why didn't they go down. But we are happy that here is Lord Ram, who is described as the controller of all such laws, not just one law, but the controller of, he is a controller of law givers. Those who give such laws, he is their controller. When the controller is present, laws can be suspended. Isn't it? Just like you may have like this road in front of us, this is no entry. In the daytime if you enter, you might have to pay a fine. What if the police find that some criminal is trying to go here and there and the policeman just goes like that? And you stop them and say, pay a fine, you're entering no entry. They say, nonsense, they are doing duty. We are after a criminal. So we are breaking some law because we ourselves made the law for a smooth flow of profit. But there's an emergency now. It's common sense. So Prabhupada says, rather than research mundane laws, we do research on the person who has given these laws. It is similar but not the same. And the results are completely opposite. Someone says, we research the law of gravity, and someone says, I research the life of the person who is given the law of gravity. And what are the results? One stays in the samsara, having so many research subjects. Srottavyadi Rajendra Nanam Santi Sahasrasha. Srottavya Adi, that means for hearing, for discussing, for researching, for compiling, for glorification. Shivdev Goswami says, mundanes have millions of subjects. Apashyatam Atma Tattvam. Why do they have so many subjects? Because they don't see the Atma Tattva. Again, the word Tattva comes, truth. Griheshu Grihamedinam. Because they are, the whole thing is on one. A Medhi is a pole. Medhi. Have you seen those, it's called a ghani, where you make oil? There's a bull which just goes round and round and round. So this bull, the distance traveled is so much, isn't it, in a day? Right, from morning is moving around. But very easy, it's the same place. Why? Because the whole thing is concentrated on one pole. So those who are sense enjoyers, they might be doing so many things. Everything is based on one thing. What's in it for me? What's my sense enjoyment? That's why they are called Griha Medhi. The opposite of a Griha Medhi is a Grihastha. It was an ashram. Ashrama. All kinds of labor, all kinds of hard work is undertaken for self-realization. That's why it's called an ashram. So the demigods pray that you are the absolute truth in all three phases of time. Krishna is truth yesterday, today and tomorrow. Because where Krishna is, there is no yesterday. There is no tomorrow. There is only today. Now we can't imagine what it means to be having, like today psychologists say, stay in the present. Don't worry about the past. Don't lament about the past. Don't worry about the future. What they're saying is basically sane advice that take a spiritual life. But that they don't mean that. Because we see that when something has happened and it troubles us, we are in lamenting mode. I shouldn't have done that. Or I should have taken, what if I would have just taken option A? How nice it would be. So there is lamentation for something happened or didn't happen. Or how nice that should happen tomorrow. So there is some hankering. Hankering and lamentation. And that's what happens. There is akanksha for something to happen. And there is moha. Or there is vilap. Shok of moha. There is moha of something to happen. There is shok of what happened. And that gives rise to bhaya, fear. Where Krishna is, the spiritual world, there is simply no yesterday. You say, what do you mean? Krishna slept, he got up in the morning, Mother Yashoda gave him a bath. But time doesn't decay anything. We have this thing called good old days, isn't it? We talk of good old days. In fact, in 70s, 73 or 72, some devotee remarked to Prabhupada, Swamiji, do you remember, that time is Prabhupada, Prabhupada, do you remember the good old days? So personally, it's not the good old days are now. It's not like something is gone forever. Everything is fresh. But we can't see that, at least with objects. Our own bodies, they are young, they grow old, they get disease, and they die. So the body is not absolute truth. In fact, nothing can be absolute truth. Check out for yourself. Describe yourself in 5 sentences. Whatever you say. I'm a man, I'm a doctor, I stay in Borivali, I travel by car. And use this criteria. All of them are relative truths. Relative in the sense, they could be changed. You're a man. Can I be changed? Sure. You stay in this particular place. Can that change? Sure. You're rich. Can that change? Sure. So therefore, everything, the Sanskrit word is sapeksha tat satya. Sapeksha, there is some apeksha, there is something demanded. When that thing is true, then this thing is true. Like I am Indian. What condition has to be fulfilled that you can call yourself Indian? India has to exist. Yeah, true. If there is no India, how can you call yourself Indian? Believe you me, it happened with Yugoslavia. There is nobody like Yugoslavian nowadays. They became 6 different nations, 6 different languages, 6 different identities. You may say, are you a resident of the Soviet Union? No. They call it the demise of the Soviet Union. The country died. We never saw it being born, but they say it died. So therefore, relative truths, they extend to something so close to our own ego. Speaking from the Vedanta point of view, I am the enjoyer. What I am enjoying? I am enjoying because this world has been created for me to enjoy. When this world is assimilated by the Lord Himself, no enjoyers. Of course, the fears remain. So therefore, Krishna and His name doesn't depend on anything. One more example, which is a simple one, of how Krishna gave His world to Brahma, that this particular Jarasandh won't be hurt by me. I won't kill him. Now sometimes demons, knowing that Vishnu or Krishna is hard to find, why not just take boons from some other lesser authorities? But act in such a way that everything is covered practically, like Hiranyakashipu's boon. I shouldn't die. Normally how people die? Oh, he died at night. Or someone dies in the day. So no death in day or night. Either you die inside your house or outside. So he said, I shouldn't die inside or outside. What else? you die either up or down. So no death up or down. You die due to some natural cause. No death due to natural causes. He said, I shouldn't die by any being created by you. Now, if you are giving me a boon, that means you will not kill me. And any being created by you cannot kill me. So I am done for. I am free. Then no astra, no shastra. No weapon or no mantra. Day or night or between. In, out. Astra, shastra. No created being. So Hiranyakashipu thought, I am pretty well insured for against death. Nobody can kill me. So this is the foolishness that you think that Narasimha Dev, in fact when he saw Narasimha Dev, see how the demons in the Bhagavatam, they address Krishna. You creature, creature, the word implies a creation, isn't it? Creation, the product of creation process is creature. How does Krishna explain that? He says, nobody created me. This is a weak stumbling block to understand how somebody can be so powerful and nobody created him. There has to be someone. Has to be someone. So this is our mundane experience here. And that's what we lodge or we paste it on Krishna's personality. So therefore Krishna could easily kill Hiranyakashipu in the form of Narasimha Dev. But the Jarasandha, there was a different drama. Because Jarasandha was very charitable, Krishna, Bhima and Arjun, they went and dressed as Brahmanas. In the evening they went to Jarasandha's capital, they knocked on the palace gate, they were allowed in. Anyone who wants charity could go to Jarasandha immediately. He was a demon but he was a very charitable person also. He was knowing that if I give to Brahmanas what they want, I'll be getting some kind of piety. So these three Brahmanas, they came and begged before Jarasandha. They said, we want something from you. He said, well, okay. We want to fight. The way they said, Jarasandha looked at them and said, you are no Brahmanas. You are Kshatriyas. I could see you, the way you walk. The way you hold yourself, the way you talk. Normally people who are accustomed to giving orders, just see sometimes how their politeness or their polite words is more or less like a formality. The words are polite, but the tone is certainly not. So they said, well, yes. I am Krishna, Vasudev, this is Arjun, the greatest archer, and this is Bhima. You can choose anyone among us. Jarasandha said, Krishna, you are no warrior. I don't have to fight with you. You fled away from me so many times. So what good is there for me in fighting with you? Arjuna is younger than me. Like in Arjuna Chai. He's like a small kid. Bhima could be a formidable opponent. So they fought. They would fight in the day and take prasad in the evening. Together. But just see, it shows that there was some kind of civility. Even when they are opponents, they would discuss other things, maybe the weather or the crops or whatever. But they would sit together and they would say, okay, we meet tomorrow again. It went on for days and days and days. And one day, Jarasandha could be seen as being a bit fatigued. So Krishna, he spoke to Bhima, I think Bhima, you should slow down. Your opponent is getting too much harassed. So that was a cue for Bhima. You see how Krishna is so expert in everything. This was a cue to Bhima that fight more. With greater force. So he fought with him and Krishna had told him by holding a straw and just bifurcating in two. So when Bhima caught Jarasandha, wheeled him around 100 times in the air, just to make sure that he will lose his balance. That's what they do. In fact, some warriors in the Kurukshetra war, just by this cartwheeling, they lost their lives. No need for them to do anything else. Jarasandha was thrown on the ground. Bhima put his left leg on his left leg, took his right leg, and with a mighty thrust just tore him apart into two pieces. Can you imagine what must have happened? But there was a reason behind this. Jarasandha, his name has the word Sandha in it, Sandhi means joining. He was actually born in two. A woman named Jara joined him. Therefore he was called Jarasandha. So his death would be only through this process. No other way he could be killed. And Brahma had given a boon that Krishna or Vishnu will never touch you. You will never be, you need not fear death from them. So Krishna always is true to his vow. If there is one personality whose word we need not doubt, that is Lord Krishna. And he shows it by upholding the vows or the boons, the benedictions uttered by his devotees even. If his devotee has said something, he said, oh, I have to abide by it. Because otherwise, in fact, some devotees also expertly pray to Krishna that, I don't care if you tell a lie. You may say something and that may not happen. But in my case, your devotee has said that this has happened to me. So now it's up to you. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, so Krishna and Krishna's compassionate nature, they are like in competition. So devotees pray to Krishna's compassionate nature, which is personified by Srimati Radhika. If she says, this person is a better devotee than me, so Krishna says, now I have to make him like that. I know he's not, he knows he's not. But what to do? Now it has been certified by her that he's a very nice dude. He's much better than me in this service. If she has said something like that, it has to happen. There is no way out. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says, better to pray to Krishna's compassionate nature. Instead of calling yourself devotees of Krishna, so that's why Gaudiya Vaishnavas are the smartest of the lot. It's not like we chant Radha Rani's name and people say, you know, why there is Krishna here, present Vishnu, why chant some feminine name? No, it's not a question of that. It's a question of expediency. Jahan pe kaam hota hai, wahin jayenge na. If you stand in front of a counter, it is open. Bhakti Dattu Maharaj is making this point that once Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he told a fellow in Bengal that you call yourself Shaktas, we are the original Shaktas. Because we praise the original potency. Among the other prayers made by the demigods, then they start saying that they describe what this world is. So this is something for devotees interested in numerology. They say, my dear Lord, this cosmic manifestation is like one tree. This one tree has fruits giving two kinds of tastes. Any guesses? You are too pious. He is saying self-gratification and devotional service. Well, it is true in one way. Happiness and distress. To put it more concisely. One tree giving two different kinds of taste has roots going in three directions. What could that be? the three votes of a drill later. Now this one tree having two fruits, three roots going in three different directions, having four kinds of tastes. Yes, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Mundane religiosity, which used to mundane artha, resources for exploiting, which gives you mundane sense enjoyment, and then makes you go towards mukti from all the previous three. And I have enough of all three. Because that's not permanent. We'll come to what is permanent mukti and impermanent in the next prayer of the demigods. Now these four tastes given by this tree through its fruits is taken through five senses. But when you start getting these tastes through these five senses, six kinds of situations occur. There is lamentation, death, old age, disease, hunger and thirst. The tree has a bark, every tree has a bark, skin, which has seven layers. Some doctors may help me, there is flesh, skin, flesh, blood, semen, marrow, bone, and fat. Fat and flesh are similar. There are eight elements making up this tree, which are the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and ego. And there is something nine. Nine modes? Nine gates in the body, yes. This body has nine gates. Out of the tenth, there are ten kinds of air circulating in the body. This is how they describe this tree. They call this thing riksha. Now you may say, what's wrong in calling it riksha? But sad to inform you, but riksha means something which is to be cut down eventually. Anything which is about to be cut down, that's a riksha. So therefore the cosmic manifestation is to be cut down, and everything which is a part of this whole set will also be cut down. So therefore, you are not part of this thing which is to be cut down. Like people say, you know, how did Krishna disappear, or how did he die? Like, did yesterday's sun die? Is it a new sun today? No, the same sun. So if a mundane object in one universe can show us this, can have this appearance of going away from our sight, again coming up as if fresh, every sunrise is fresh. We experience every sunrise. You get the same experience. People never get bored by sunrises. How does it happen? And Krishna is the source of millions such suns, not just one. So if he can make objects which have certain characteristics, won't he have that ability? So therefore, the demigods pray that intelligent people, they do not put so much of effort, or they could not put so much hope in a vriksha which will eventually be cut down. So what do? They say that they take refuge in your devotional service. They pray that your devotional service is actually guided by the great authorities, acharyas, pure devotees. In fact, they have made the process of devotional service like a boat. What happens if you take somebody from the shore and say, okay, I'll give you a lift. I'll carry you to the opposite shore. you carry him to the opposite shore and you find that you also are there. You don't make any special effort for yourself. But the only problem is, now the boat also has gone to the opposite shore. And there are still people waiting at the previous shore. So the demigods pray that, but by the dint of their devotional service, by your mercy, when somebody engages in your devotional service, the whole material ocean compresses into water which can be held in the hoof print of a calf. It becomes so small. You don't need a boat for that. You just walk over it. So the boat of devotional service, the boat given by the acharyas, it is still tied to the same pole. It's not even used. When someone takes to any process other than devotional service, the ocean remains as it is. There is no choice. You have to traverse it. And nobody can just cross the ocean with his own efforts. So this is the analogy used by the demigods, that there is no need for anyone to use the boat. And finally, they speak about what happens to those who choose not to be devotees of Krishna. And then you want to pray here. This is text 32. Yenye ravindaksha vimukta maninas vayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruya krishrena parampadam pata patantyo patanti adhona drita yushmadangraya. Ye anye, ye is all these, anye, not taking part in devotional service. Arvindaksha, Prabhupada gives a nice gloss on this. Arvinda is a lotus. Aksha means one whose eyes are like lotus, lotus eyed. Normally you cannot see a lotus at night, because lotus, normally you cannot see lotus with your eyes, because you need, the lotus blooms during night. You need to have special vision for that. So Krishna's devotional service is not visible unless Krishna favors you. Bhakti is the only thing which cannot be had, cannot be delivered to anyone. It is bestowed. It comes on its own accord. So therefore, those who are angi, those who take some other path, the demigods are saying, vimukta manina. They claim themselves are liberated. Whether they are liberated or not, who knows? What is the test then? They fall down after a lot of hard struggle. Patanti adho. Where do they fall? Because they don't show reverence. Anadrita. They don't show adar. They don't show reverence towards your lotus feet. Once Jayapadaka Swami gave an example of a person in Bengal who was supposed to go to his father-in-law's place for a festival. He said, I know about 2-3 villages to the east, and after that there is a forest, and after that is my father-in-law's village. So I will reach that. He was told, take detailed instructions how to go there. He says, don't worry. Finally they arrived when he had to go there, and suddenly he was confused whether it is the east or the west or this or that. So he came to some understanding that his father-in-law was a big landowner, many cows. So his cows also come for pasturing near the pasturing ground. So he said, this is a good shortcut. I'll just follow the cows, and cows have to reach the barn at the end of the day anyway. So I also will reach. So without taking proper instruction, without following the proper main road, he started searching for a pasturing ground. After much inquiry, he found out where the cows were. He caught hold of a tail of a cow that poor thing went mad. And when all they were running, dragging him through thorny bushes, through rivers, through mountains, through peaks, through rocks, through everything. So, good enough, he found himself in the barn, with about 20 bruises all over, clothes torn to rags. So the father-in-law came and said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, you know, I just took another road." So, aruya krichrena, with so much torture you do some austerity, only to come to some reasonable Brahman platform, and then when you commit a mistake, you again fall down. So what was the benefit of that? So therefore, ye anye. Someone may say that, aside from devotees, who always seek shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees, but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this, Lord Brahma, another demigod, said, "O lotus eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure, avishuddha buddhaya. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet." Next, the demigod gives a benediction that with the help of bhakti yoga, any simple devotee can traverse the heads of Maya's commanders in chief. Normally, which are the chief commanders of Maya? Like one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, "Mr. Lust, Mr. Anger, Mr. Greed," and they have legends of soldiers under them. Maya doesn't have any shortage in the earth of soldiers. So what to speak of ordinary foot soldiers of Maya? A simple devotee, by taking favor from Krishna, this is how they describe, they may step over the heads of Maya's commanders. So that is the greatness, that is the elevated status of bhakti. Then the demigods pray to the various incarnations of Krishna, how you appear in various forms, in various ways. Your forms are pleasing to the devotees and not pleasing to the non-devotees. Prabhupada in the lecture said that if somebody comes on the main road and finds a policeman and immediately hides, whose fault is it? The policeman is doing his duty. Why are you hiding? That means you have done something which makes you feel that this serves my enemy. Similarly, like Bhaktivedanta Maharaj used to say, he was preaching in East European countries. Eastern Europe at that time was under communist rule. There could hardly be a person with black skin in almost the entire country. So it's not like he could just hide in the landscape anywhere. He was visible. So Prabhupada wrote to him that familiarity with the product and likeness for the salesman are two factors in selling something. In your case, they don't know what my books are, and nobody looks like you in that country. And still you are selling books by the hundreds. You are getting standing orders. That's your credit. So therefore, he was doing it because he was convinced that somehow, if I can show them Krishna, and he said that I had a small test. I would talk about philosophy, Indology, sociology and world peace and everything, and somehow bring them to one picture of Krishna himself. And if the professor would say, "How beautiful," he said, "I have it now. I can sell him so many things." But sometimes someone would see the picture and he would go berserk. you say, well, this fellow is of the other category. So Krishna's avatars are like the policeman. When he comes, a law-abiding citizen, if he has lost his way, if he wants some help, and say, whom do I ask? There's no one I know here. And say, oh, there's a police. I can ask him, traffic police. So the policeman, the sight of a policeman is a happy one. You feel encouraged because you're law-abiding. If you're a lawbreaker, then you want to avoid him. Similarly, those who are demoniac by nature, when they see Krishna's avatar, that arouses them to do something about it. They say, this is not true, this is not an avatar, or so many ways. Previously, demons used to directly attack Krishna with weapons. Now they use a simple weapon, it's called a ballpoint pen. They write about him. Avatar is not possible, or this is not true, or it's dead. Same demoniac tendency, but using different weapons. So therefore, Prabhupada, he fought fire with fire. He wrote so many books. Like once he was telling that Krishna Janma is a very joyous occasion. Krishna takes birth. He is the son of Devaki, Devaki Nandan. He gives pleasure. He is Nanda Nandan. So Nanda and Devaki, they are celebrating their son's birthday. They are inviting all of you to come. Come, chant, dance, take prasad. The cowherd community was not poor in any sort. They had butter to throw. Can you imagine how much they must have to eat? So they are very opulent. So this is their birthday celebration. But if you have some crazy confusion as to why Krishna's birthday, why not somebody else's, why chant Hare Krishna, why not something else, we have 80 books, 400 pages each, to convince you. So it's up to you. You can choose any path. It's not like the books are filled with some hard stuff, boring knowledge. But it's not necessary. If you have the faith that you will only chant Hare Krishna, you will dance in Krishna Sankirtan, and you will take Krishna Prasad, and you can chant every day the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then you have known everything. Nothing remains to be known. For you, as the demigod's promise, this whole ocean will be compressed as water. It can fill the hoof print of a calf. And very easily you can traverse it. So I would like to thank for giving me the opportunity to speak something about Lord Krishna here. We'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Gopinath ki, Sai Gaur Premanandi.